T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is Grant Cameron, and I'm doing a special broadcast today dealing with the raid on Mar-a-Lago last night. The reason I'm talking about it is it was made public that the raid had to do with presidential documents. And as I've worked with presidential documents for 3 decades, I decided that I would step in and talk a bit about my experience and why the situation in Florida is considered very serious by the U.S. government. The whole idea is that the records of the president belong to the people of the United States. Before Nixon, the situation was different. The records were owned by the president, and he donated them to the National Archives, to the people of the United States. So if you're looking at the Truman and the Eisenhower documents, those were donated, the Kennedy documents. But what happened was that when Richard Nixon left office, he took a bunch of incriminating documents and the famous Watergate tapes, and he was confronted and stopped about this, and a deal was made with the Ford administration, the National Archives, with Richard Nixon, that these documents that he had taken with him when he left the White House would be locked up in a safe in California, and that Nixon would have one key to the safe and the National Archives would have the other key. This whole thing went to court, and it went to the Supreme Court, and Nixon lost the dispute about these documents, and they had to be returned to the National Archives. So what they did was, Congress was very upset about this whole thing, and this was Republican Congress, this was under the Republicans. They came up with U.S. 44 U.S.C. Section 2201 to 2209, which is the preservation of the presidential records. It's known as the Presidential Records Act. And what this brought into law was that the records of the president are owned by the president, are owned by the people of the United States, and that the president and all his executive branch have to preserve all the records that they have for history, and they are not allowed to destroy documents or take documents with them. So the situation with Trump, according to the records, is that he had been warned early on that there was rumors that records were being destroyed. So his first national security advisor, Rance Priebus, who I actually was involved with, that there was a public citizen who wanted to give a UFO briefing to Rance, who was the first national security advisor. And I was called in to help with this, and I said there was really nothing we could do because I don't really know where the bodies and the crafts are or anything like that, that the president can get whatever he wants. So giving him a briefing is kind of irrelevant. So his first national security advisor, John Kelly, his second national security advisor, were also warned, and they warned Trump about this thing about the Presidential Records Act, that everything had to be preserved. So when President Trump left office, he took at least 15 boxes of files with him to Mar-a-Lago. And the archives realized that documents were gone because a number of very public documents were missing from the files. One of the key documents that I heard that had been involved was Trump's friend, the communist leader of North Korea, had written what Trump called this love letter to him, and that particular letter was missing from the files. So a confrontation between the National Archives and Donald Trump ensued, and just this year, 15 archives boxes of documents were retrieved from Mar-a-Lago and brought back to Washington to the National Archives. And that would, the number of documents there is substantial. If it's a small archives box, I'm not sure whether they're talking a larger or a smaller archives box. If it's a small archives box, the number of documents would be between 15,000 and 22,000 pages of documents that were taken to Mar-a-Lago. And if it's a large archives box, the number of documents pages would be between 45,000 and 52,500. Now, what I heard was that the index of the documents were for unclassified documents that were in these 15 boxes, the index was 100 pages long of these documents that were retrieved. And the secure documents, the classified documents that were retrieved, there was a 3-page list of documents. And apparently there was documents that were so highly classified that they were never put into a list that were also retrieved. Now, people may not realize how serious this is taken in terms of classified information. There's been a number of people in the last few years who have been caught with one page that they were giving to the Russians, and they would get like 5 years. It's very, very serious that they maintain and control these classified documents. Now, when I worked at the National Archives, and I'm probably one of six people in the UFO community who has actually worked with presidential records and has been to the National Archives, I know John Greenwald was at the Kennedy Library, and he also did research at the Reagan Library, which is National Archives material, presidential record material. So John would know the procedures, that they're very, very strict. When you go into these facilities, you're not allowed to bring any paper, pens, anything. You have to put everything in a locker, and they're very secure about what you're bringing in, because they don't want you to go in there and either take documents out, official documents, or bring documents in that you would stick into the document file that would make it look like it's an official document. I'm not sure whether John Greenwald has worked at the National Archives, but the National Archives in Washington is very, very secure. Although if you really worked at it, you could get a document in there and you could probably get a document out. But they have a bunch of rules that are very strict. You're not allowed to have a pen. At the Eisenhower Library, I was reprimanded probably a half dozen times for various offenses. One was I had a pen. One time they made me spit out my gum. And they have people that when you're working with the documents in the archives room, the research room, they actually have someone sitting at the front of the room that watches people all the time. And you have all these rules, like you're only allowed to take one archives box out at a time. You're only allowed to take one file out of the archives box, and you have to have a marker paper that goes in there where the file is. You're not allowed to spread the files out. You can only bring one file or one document out of the file at a time, and this is to keep all the documents in order so that you don't shuffle documents around and put the files in the wrong file and stuff like that. It's very, very strict. There's even a UFO story told, and this is the story of Danny Sheehan when he was looking at what he said was the classified Blue Book files, and this was done at the Madison Building, which is one of the buildings for the Congressional Library. He was in the basement, and he brought in a yellow pad, a legal yellow pad, which for whatever reason they didn't take from him. He had to put his briefcase in a locker. He went in with his legal pad, and he tells the story of when he saw the crashed UFO photo with the writing on the side of the craft. He took the inside of the back hard cover of the legal pad and traced the letters off the side of this craft. And when he left to go out, he was confronted about this legal pad, and they sort of leafed through the legal pad to see if he had done any writing or what was in it, and didn't see the inside back cover, and so Danny Sheehan was able to get this out. But this shows you how secure these facilities are in terms of legal records, and it all goes back to this whole idea that Congress, after the Nixon incident, wrote up law that made it very secure. Now, where the Trump one is going to get very, very controversial is that any violation of this law is a felony. And if you commit a felony, you are not allowed to hold any position inside the U.S. Government. So this is going to be confronted, that this is an attempt to stop Donald Trump from running for a second term. But I will say he made it pretty easy for them to do it, because when you've got 15 archives boxes and you actually admit that you've got them and you return them, it's pretty easy to charge you with walking away with documents that you shouldn't have had, especially the idea that you've got classified documents that you've taken out of the White House, and you can sell them to people or hand them off to foreign governments or whatever. There's all these stipulations why they have such strong controls over classified documents, because classified documents indicate that they are their exposure to the public would be a threat to national security. Top secret documents even worse, and above top secret documents with the code words on them are extremely, extremely sensitive to national security. People will again say this was motivated by politics. It should be remembered that the man who signed, Wray, the head of the FBI who signed off on this warrant to do this search, was a Trump appointee. And the other thing that people have to remember is that you can be very assured that whatever judge has signed off on this thing would know that this is going to be highly controversial. And when you have these warrants, you have to prove that you have sufficient evidence that a crime has been committed, and the warrant is restricted to exactly where you say the material will be. So they had some sort of inside source that indicated where they were going to look, and the judge would have made sure that the material that they had was pretty secure before he would sign off on it. Now, another thing that I can sort of mention in terms of the UFO situation with this that I have dealt with has to do with my experience. And let me do one before. One of these things about the idea that you can move documents in or out of a national security facility and actually, you know, change the U.S. history in terms of what happens is the whole MJ-12 controversy that happened during the 1980s that a lot of people today would really not know, and had to do with a leak of documents were known as the MJ-12 documents. But one of the things that happened was that Bill Moore and Jamie Chandra, who received these documents, had gotten a clue from sources that they claimed were inside the U.S. government to go to the National Archives and search a series of documents that just had just been declassified. They went in there and they spent a substantial amount of time, and that's when they found in one of the files, they found what was known as the Cutler-Twining memo. And it looked very official. It had a declassification stamp on it, and this was photocopied, and they got the National Archives to admit that this document was in there. But the controversy later was the fact that was claimed that somebody had stuck the document in the official files. They had faked this document, which showed that there was a meeting of the MJ-12 group during the Eisenhower administration, and that this document had been stuck into the file, and it was a phony document. So that shows you how these situations can arise where documents stuck into the file can actually change American history. Now, the one I had my own experience, and this was the whole situation with my filing for the Clinton documents. So what happened was in 2000, I had filed a Freedom of Information Act request with an office known as the Office of Science and Technology Policy. Now, that is the office of the science advisor to the President of the United States. Now, this was filed when Bill Clinton was still in office, and I got a reply back that I had would receive 1,000 pages of documents from the Office of Science and Technology Policy. Now, these are documents all dealt with the what was called the Rockefeller Initiative, and these documents are known as the Rockefeller Initiative documents. It's 1,000 pages. When I went through it, almost like what the National Archives has done with Donald Trump, was that I went through it and I realized that the documents that they had given me didn't agree with the index. So the index showed, I think there were 7 documents that I had not received. So I filed an appeal and I got some of these 7 documents that were missing from the first set. So the number of documents that I got then moved over 1,000 pages of documents. So Lawrence Rockefeller had said in 1992, whoever wins the election, whether it was Perot, who was running as a third party, or the Republicans or the Democrats, he was going in and he was going to get a UFO disclosure from the President of the United States. And he was a powerful guy that would have to be dealt with. So when Clinton won, he made his approach. And the idea is that the president has to be moved away from this issue. He can't really get his fingerprints on this issue. So the science advisor to the President of the United States dealt with Lawrence Rockefeller. So these Rockefeller Initiative documents were sort of a record of the interaction between Lawrence Rockefeller and the science advisor to the President of the United States. There was 2 documents that dealt with Hillary Clinton, that Hillary Clinton was the post office, that all the stuff going from Rockefeller to the science advisor and from the science advisor back to Rockefeller were going to the First Lady's office. My indication of that was that this would make it available to the president, that Hillary Clinton could tell the president off the record what was going on, and then it looked like the president wasn't involved. So these Rockefeller Initiative documents were given to me, and I made a copy for Steve Bassett of these 1,000 pages of documents, sent them to Steve. Steve actually has them on, some of them on, the key documents on his website. And I think he sent a copy of these documents, I think, to the New York Times and the Washington Post. They didn't do anything with them. I actually sent the originals. I don't even have the documents anymore. I sent the original documents to Joe Bookman, who was the sort of the host that ran the citizens' hearing in Utah. He's got the original documents. So when I filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the Clintons, to the Clinton Library after 5 years after the president left office, and that's the rule. At 5 years after the president leaves office, all his records are now open to the Freedom of Information Act request. So on January the 20th, 5 years after a president leaves office, there's a bunch of presidential historians, including me, who immediately start to file at 12 midnight to try to get documents as to that administration and the subjects that they want looked at. And the FOIA works that first come, first serve. So if I were to file at 12:01, all my UFO requests, they would have to do it. This year, I actually sort of lost track of time, and I didn't file till 11 o'clock on the 20th, which means there's hundreds of people ahead of me in terms of people who have filed before me. But I've filed maybe 30 Freedom of Information Act requests with the Obama administration for all documents dealing with UFOs and John Podesta and every subject I could think of. So anyway, I filed in 2009 with the Clinton administration for their documents. And what came up was... or 2006. So what came up was a lot of documents, maybe 10,000 pages of documents, sort of related to UFOs or UFOs. And I actually went to Clinton Library twice to photograph these documents. And when I was at the Clinton Library, again, I was the only person in the research room, and they had a person sitting there. Their only job was to sit there and watch me to make sure I didn't steal documents or put documents in or whatever. And this person kept falling asleep. So I actually sometimes took pictures of this archivist who was falling asleep when he's supposed to be watching me work on these documents. But anyway, what happened was when I had gotten all the documents, I realized that the Rockefeller Initiative documents were not in the files. And they should have been in there. They should have been in the OSTP section. So I filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the Clinton administration, and it came back that they didn't have anything. So I said, well, this is nonsense. So I filed back with them and actually sent them the actual two-page index of the documents that came with the original FOIA. So it named the time, the date, the document, this person to this person, and how many pages there was in the document. And they came back and said, no, we don't have anything at all. Check with the National Archives. So then I filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the National Archives. I sent them the index of it. National Archives came back and said, no, they don't have the Rockefeller Initiative documents either. And so I filed an appeal with the National Archives, and again had the index and said, these documents exist because we have the documents. And National Archives went against my appeal, said they didn't have anything. They had done a search, and that was the end of the story. So that shows you that history can change, that documents can disappear. Even in the most recent controversy now with the January 6th committee, where they have discovered that the text messages of the heads of the Pentagon when they left were all wiped clean off the phones, and the Secret Service is missing all their text messages dealing with the time of January 6th. And this is something that you'll probably see congressional rules being made more strict about how to deal with classified information, how to deal with presidential records. And so that's basically all I wanted to say. Let me check my notes here to see if there's anything else. Again, it started with the Nixon documents, where Nixon took the documents. That's why we have a federal regulation dealing with presidential records. Private, I mentioned the idea that it used to be private. The president used to control the records, but not anymore. And the president signs off on this. The other thing, they are probably going to bring some rules on that already, I think, exists, as is using secure apps. That a lot of, it appears that a lot of times people will walk past the regulation by using a secure app, which deletes everything when it first comes up. That's illegal now, but it'll probably be reinforced. Michael Beschloss, you may want to watch his Twitter account. He's probably the top presidential historian. He's talking a lot on his Twitter and on various interviews about how this works, and he would be the absolute authority on presidential records and how they're dealt with and why the rules exist as they do. That's about it. Thanks for listening, and we may do an update down the road as this thing unravels. But once again, the Presidential Record Act is a very serious set of regulations, and the felony is actually 18 U.S.C. Section 2071. As to the felony, to remove, mutilate, or destroy any documents is a federal felony, any presidential records or any government records. So we'll see where it goes. Thanks for listening. That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.